Good morning. Thank you for being here today. It's good to be with you. A few vignettes from my travels of late. I rented a bike to ride from Paris to Chartres to go to the cathedral. And I had many experiences, but one particularly intense, vulnerable moment when I had a malfunction with my bike shoe, which clips into the pedal, and it was loose, and I couldn't get out of the pedal when I stopped at the side of the road in the French countryside. I couldn't get either shoe out of either pedal, and proceeded to tip over quickly and hit the gravel, hit the ground. Humbled and annoyed at myself, because I remembered then that my pedal was missing a little screw that I failed to replace. It was my fault, an intense moment of vulnerability. Jesus has an intense moment of vulnerability in today's gospel. He's very direct. And he talks about eating my flesh and drinking my blood. Then you will abide in me and I in you. And we heard the disciples say, this is a difficult saying. How do we understand this? And many stopped following him. In fact, these last 5 weeks, I know that people have been leaving Jesus. People have been walking away. We started, you know, five weeks ago with the 5,000. And then we're in a synagogue. And now at the end of today's gospel, it seems he's with the 12. And he says in that vulnerable moment, do you also wish to go away? Will you walk away as well? In this bread of life discourse that we've been hearing over the weeks, we hear about service and incarnation and how they go together. In the theology of the Last Supper, Jesus washing the disciples' feet, a clear testament to service that is based on the incarnation, based on the fact that God is present, that Jesus is gift. And he is calling the disciples in today's gospel to consume that presence, if you will, to be a part of that presence that is here and now in the material world. God is present. So John's point in the gospel is to emphasize the mystical in a world of evil, in a world of apathy, of challenge, of misdirection, of distraction. Jesus' followers are challenged to focus on God's immediate presence in their lives and how that shapes them and changes them dramatically. To physically consume in the bread and the wine the presence of God. An inward grace from outward and visible signs. Jesus reminds his followers that the Spirit is the source of all, that the Spirit is the source, and to consume the Spirit is to claim that God is with us, here, inside each person, inside you, inside me. The theologians call this realized eschatology, that the end time is now, is realized now, that salvation is here, that the kingdom is within, that healing has begun. We're not waiting for the presence of God, because God is within us. God is present. And it was apparently too difficult for some people in Jesus' hearing to take this in. And we can relate to that difficulty ourselves. It was too much. It was too mysterious. God is distant. God is powerful. God is set apart. How can God be present? How can God be within? How can I participate in that? And so they left. But Jesus spoke out against that again and again, against that dualism, that separation. The kingdom is within, with you. Consume the presence of the Spirit in your life. Be drawn and fed by that. So he's challenging them to receive that invitation and to take it up, to receive that grace and that holiness and participate in such communion. You are going to have to make a choice, he says. This is as close as we get to Jesus having an altar call. Where do you stand? Are you going to walk away? This week, I walked by the Kennedy Room, and there was a small group there, and I affectionately called them the recovering evangelicals, talking about the Anglican tradition and their own tradition growing up in the evangelical church. And I said, you know, there's an altar call happening right now in the church. But in reality, we have an altar call every week here at St. Mark's. We gather, we come forward, we walk, we gather around this table, we consume the bread and the wine, and we are making a commitment. We are moving our bodies and saying, like Peter, I believe, I'm here. I am walking towards the Spirit, and the Spirit is within me. Professor Glenn Hinson talks about the day his life was changed when he was sitting in a philosophy of religion class with Houston Smith. And Houston Smith said these words, "We ought to live each moment as if all eternity converged upon it. We ought to live each moment as if all eternity converged upon it." Hinson's life was changed by simply hearing those words. Later, he became friends with Thomas Merton, that prophetic voice of contemplation and presence, who spoke about getting in touch with the presence of God by stopping and sitting and remembering that we are loved. We desperately need to stop and to sit and to open our eyes and to wake up to the reality that God is present. We desperately need to move beyond and in spite of all else we see, people suffering, people hurting, people apathetic, leaders not awake to the mystical, to the holy, to the humbling power of love, and a holy perspective. I was really moved by Lindy's sermon last week. It was wonderful to be back and to hear her preaching and to be with you. And she told that story about the rabbi and the two pockets. And she said, I may have shared this before, but I had never heard it. And I've never heard it in all my 35 plus years of ministry. And I was moved by that story of the rabbi with the two pockets and thought about it all week. If you weren't here, the rabbi carries a slip of paper in each pocket, each of two pockets. And in one, the rabbi wrote, Bishvila Nivra Hakalam. For my sake, the world was created. And on a slip of paper in the other pocket is, Banaki Afar Ifer. I am but dust and ashes. And the rabbi would take a note out of whichever pocket he needed to at the time to remind him of truth and spiritual wisdom, as Lindy said last week. This is a contemplative action to stop and to look inside and to look outside and remember that we are mortal, that we fall down, that we are insignificant, and yet we are loved in an amazing, significant way, unconditionally. And we are invited to be part of that love and part of that eternity. How do we respond? How do we respond? So, at the end of my break this summer, I had the blessing to go to France, to go to Paris with my beloved wife and friends. And it's always good to get out of the place that you're in, to go to a different place, geographically, culturally, experientially. This is a pilgrimage, right? You've all traveled. And hopefully we're changed for the better when we do that and we come home transformed and different. It was amusing flying home from Paris. Leanne was reading something from a chef about French food, and he mentioned in the article that five different ways that Americans annoy French people with their behavior. And, of course, we engaged in all those examples ourselves. But then we remembered being in the museums with hordes of people and being annoyed at other people from other countries and their behavior, which was clueless in terms of what was proper and appropriate. Humbling. We went to a concert in the oldest church in Paris, a small church which is now Eastern Catholic, with an iconostasis and icons all over and water puddles, it's so old, on the floor. And we visited, and I saw that there was a gospel music concert advertised. I said, this is wild. Gospel music, Negro spirituals. This is crazy. So we went back a couple nights later, and there were 60, 70 people in this small church. And I didn't know if the choir was going to be American or African. Or turned out there were 6 Parisians, 5 black Parisians and 1 white, singing American gospel songs. You haven't lived until you hear... They also sang Leonard Cohen's Alleluia with a French accent. It was amazing. But they felt that it was a prayer. And to be in that place with people who spoke a different language, bringing gospel music, trying to get the French aroused in their politeness, it was moving, singing about the heart. In that old church, it was a moment of eternity for me. It was a blessing. I talked about renting a bicycle. My travel mates were kind enough to let me rent a bicycle one day to go from Paris to Chartres. And they took the rental car and met me later. But I was on my own trying to get out of Paris and get on this bikeway and find my way. And you get lost. They were doing construction. There was a detour. I got lost and I had to ask for help, and you're very vulnerable in that, by yourself out in the countryside, trying to find your way to the cathedral. But when you finally come to it, even having fallen, and you see the spires coming up from the French countryside, and you remember the pilgrims that have gone to Chartres Cathedral, which is famous for the labyrinth, the stone labyrinth in the floor, which is still covered up by chairs. It's a little metaphor. There's a path here that we have to find. There's a way to get back to Christ. But to be at the cathedral, which this is the 5th building on that site, originally a holy well, pre-Christian holy well, the 5th building, like a 9th century building, that somehow survived the Reformation, the post-Reformation religious wars, the French Revolution, World War I and World War II. The Germans occupied the city in World War II, and the Americans were about to destroy the cathedral while the Germans were there. And an American officer said, please don't do that. And so he infiltrated the German lines and to see if they were using the cathedral. And the Germans weren't in the cathedral, so they didn't bomb it. I read that soldier, the next day in a different battle, lost his life. So you're sitting and you're praying in this place, and it's full of tourists, and you're trying to remember what it's all about. The presence of Christ. And you remember that place all through the ages that's survived, that symbol of the faith that survives. Despite all the corruption and all the human frailty and sin, that used to be the merchant place, you know, at the cathedral, and you had to pay taxes to the church to sell meat or sell vegetables or fuel. There were money changers because in medieval times the currency was regional. And I thought of Jesus getting angry at the money changers and this mix that we have of politics and religion. How do we hold on to the core? How do we get back to Christ and the presence of God? Because that's what we're called to do, because the world desperately needs us to be contemplative in that way, to stop and to listen. Who are we? And how am I to behave as a person who participates in eternity, in this moment, the realized eschatology that Christ is with me, Christ is within me, that the kingdom is here, that the moment is eternal, that God is present, that you are invited to respond to that grace through nature, through history, through your own lives, to embody, to be sacraments yourself. Each and every day, God's presence in this world is real. So you're invited to stay awake in the tradition of the church, in the tradition of the people who don't walk away, in the tradition of the people who fight through human horror, who fight through fear, who fight through greed, who fight through illness. You are invited to be strengthened inside and to be moved and to walk with Christ, to surrender to the mysterious divine love of Christ and be transformed. May it be so. May this place be a place of transformation and strength, of humility, of honesty, and earnest effort, that when we fall, we get up and we keep going, knowing we are forgiven, knowing that we are loved eternally in this moment. In the name of Christ, may it be so. Amen.